Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and now a double feature edition of our series Context and a Movie, where we match a film watcher and an issues watcher to talk about an important current movie. And I say this is a double feature edition because in the last week I saw both Lincoln and Django Unchained, and this is like an anti-slavery double bill, but with the Steven Spielberg approach and the Quentin Tarantino approach being as different as you might guess they would be. I actually love both of them, despite some of the inevitable ambivalence that you've got to feel about Tarantino shoot 'em ups. So we'll talk about these films coming out. We'll talk about them coming out around the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation and compare them with Dana Stevens, Slate's film critic and co-host of Slate's Culture Gap Fest, now airing weekends on WNYC, and Trisha Rose, professor of Africana Studies at Brown University and author of The Hip Hop Wars, What We Talk About When We Talk About Hip Hop and Why It Matters. Happy New Year. Welcome back, both of you. Hi.
Hi. Hey,
how are you, Brian?
And listeners, we'll offer our customary spoiler alert here. We will try not to give too much away if you haven't seen these movies. But also, this is billed as a revenge fantasy Western. The Tarantino is about a freed slave and a bounty hunter, so you can probably do the math in terms of who ends up winning in the end. But anyway, Trisha, I heard you were going to see Django Unchained this week with some trepidation. So what were you bracing yourself for, and were your concerns realized?
Well, you know, it was a little bit more than trepidation. I actually was hoping to avoid seeing it, if you could imagine such a thing. And it was impossible. You know, ultimately, I felt I really had to check it out. I mean, the reason that I was ambivalent and just didn't want to go see it is because, you know, I haven't really loved Quentin Tarantino's movies in the past, and I was concerned about two things. One, that there was so much attention on the movie, and I thought, gosh, you know, people have been trying to make movies about slavery, particularly African Americans have been writing novels and making movies about slavery,
right,
and we haven't had this conversation yet. So part of it was, are you kidding me? Quentin Tarantino's going to make us have this conversation? So there was that resistance. But I have to actually say I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. So I have to eat a little crow on that one. I was compelled on a number of levels.
What'd you like about it? What was compelling?
Well, you know, the short answer to that is that, you know, I don't think the one of the biggest things we have not dealt with in terms of the history of slavery and the present-day legacy of slavery, which is something I'm just crucially hoping your listeners can draw this connection with,
mm-hmm,
right? The legacy of slavery, not just the history of it, is the incredible sense of feeling wronged, mistreated, no one defending, no one really understanding the level of suffering and anger that the history has created. And so there was a cathartic element that was set inside of a Western, and as a result, it allowed a certain kind of release and affirmation of the sense that wouldn't it be amazing if this story could really have gone this way, right? Even though, of course, it's all set in some, you know, ridiculous
right
context. I mean, the thought of a black man and his wife on a horse riding out of Candyland, you know, it's sort of like the end of Lorraine Hansberry when Raisin in the Sun, when they move into the all-white neighborhood, it's supposed to be a happy ending. I'm like, I don't really think so. You know, I don't really think so. And in fact, what? Were they going to ride off into the countryside of Mississippi?
Really?
I don't really
made you
so
feel good, though, didn't it?
Exactly, right? So, you know, that wasn't that part. It was, honestly, you know, turning the tables. People need to confront
mm-hmm
that desire and really important need. That said, I have, you know, critiques, but, you know, I'm sure we'll get to those later.
And listeners, you're invited into this conversation, too, if you want to talk about Lincoln and or Django Unchained, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Dana Stevens from Slate, I guess you're not supposed to take Tarantino too seriously, but this story of a slave fighting for his freedom, over-the-top action cartoon though it may be, I thought it had a very strong moral voice. I think we were just hearing that from Trisha too, and that it contained at least two types of violence: gratuitous violence, gory and sometimes nauseating, and often intended to be funny. This is the eternal morally questionable Tarantino, right? But also serious violence intended to depict the brutality of slavery, which actually felt really different to me while watching it. And here's Tarantino himself talking on Fresh Air earlier this week about just this point.
There's two types of violences in this film. There's the brutal reality of the violence that that slaves lived under the slavery laws for 245 years. And then there's the violence of Django's retribution. And that's movie violence. And that's fun. And that's cool. And that's really enjoyable. It's kind of what you're waiting for.
So I don't know. I'd go to so far as to say, Dana, that any violence is cool and enjoyable. But I knew his take going into the film. And I feel like I really got it as I was watching it, and that he really communicated it, and that there was something qualitatively different about the violence that was perpetrated on the slaves.
I'm surprised and impressed to hear that the two of you had this takeaway from the movie, that it had some sort of moral vision and that it was able to sort of distinguish among these different types of violence. I feel like he's getting credit for thinking things through that I don't think he did think through that far. This movie doesn't strike me as a critique of violence, whether racial or otherwise. It strikes me, if anything, as a celebration of it. And I think that's a queasiness with Tarantino that I'm never able to get over. And in spite of this movie's kind of, in many ways, dazzling technical prowess, and, you know, it has moments that are very funny, it has moments that are very beautiful, it has moments that are extremely hard to watch. It's something that causes you to feel intense emotions for nearly three straight hours. But I came out of it feeling like I had no idea what he was actually trying to say about the history of race relations or the current state of race relations or basically anything else, except, as he says in that Fresh Air interview, how very cool it was to watch Django get his retribution.
Huh. You want to come back on that, Tricia?
Well, you know, I actually didn't say I thought that he was making a critique of violence, so that part I can't speak to. But uh-huh. I will say that, you know, I think there were distinctions in the type of violence, and I think anytime you tell the story in the United States, because there's no history of it happening yet, of slavery, that much from the point of view of the enslaved, with their desire for meeting this extraordinary violence with extraordinary violence, there is a moral component to that, which is to say that, you know, we are not going to be treated this way forever, right? This is not going to happen. In fact, if there was no intent, I would ask the question, why was the whole segment written in with Candy, you know, the slave master, the vicious slave master, giving this whole narrative about why haven't black people fought back? Why have they allowed this to happen? There was a real question there about why is this movie not reality more often in historical terms? I think that's an incredibly important question. Now, do I get queasy with violence? Well, I mean, then, no question. On the other hand, it is American popular culture. Let's not drop it all on Quentin Tarantino's shoulders, as much as I dislike his work in general, which I'm really not a big fan, which is funny. But you know, the violence is a systemic issue in American pop culture.
And Dana, this moral difference between Christoph Waltz's character's bounty hunting, killing outlaws when he didn't always have to kill them to try to arrest them and get the bounty, you know, just to get the government reward, and Jamie Foxx is doing it as the only means to his freedom from slavery. Again, a difference in the motivation behind the violence that was really engaging to me and raised moral questions. You didn't experience that?
No, it did. I mean, the movie does raise all kinds of questions. I'm not sure that Tarantino has thought them through enough to really have the means to answer that question on the screen, but it leaves you coming out talking about all the questions. So in that sense, it's a brilliantly successful movie. I feel like it is a movie that will have people talking about, you know, whether it's too violent, whether they were able to laugh. I mean, I think the question of laughter in this movie is really interesting and important. And, you know, there are many moments where you're supposed to laugh, whoever's supposed to, whatever that means. There are many moments that are laid out as funny by Tarantino. For example, the Ku Klux Klan scene, right, where Don Johnson is trying to gather a lynch mob essentially together to go after Django, and they can't make their hoods fit. It's sort of a proto Ku Klux Klan where they haven't figured out the game yet, and it's like something out of a Mel Brooks movie, and it's hilarious. But it is really hard to figure out how to square it with the fact that, you know, it's a bunch of white guys plotting to go kill a black man.
Right. Did you laugh at that scene, Tricia?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was hilarious. He played it a little bit too long for me, but of course, this is a classic example where the more you know about history, the both the more annoying it is, but also the richer it is. Because, of course, women did make the Ku Klux Klan costumes. There were whole women's auxiliaries to the KKK who did make the costumes. So I think Quentin Tarantino did do a little bit more homework than Dana thinks. Again, I'm not going to call him a historian, and I'm not going to claim it's sort of like right. the Steven Spielberg effect of gathering the greatest historians on the subject, but I do think that that was a clear reference. And the kind of, you know, the way in which they were also bumbling as well as vicious and violent, right? These weren't, you know, geniuses all the time, right? That we've elevated them because of their brutality, but they weren't necessarily yeah. geniuses. So I think all of that was intentional.
And I agree, Dana, and I do wonder whether, even if Tarantino thought it through, these different moral strains of the different scenes of violence. And even if I, having read and heard about the movie and heard him in his interview before having seen it, you know, felt I was able to sit there and get it. To think that a mass audience that goes to see Tarantino movies for other reasons, you know, because they like the shoot 'em ups and the actions, that they're going to sit there and say, this is cartoon violence, and then 30 seconds later say, okay, now this is real. This has a lesson. You know, maybe that's assuming more communication than can actually take place to millions of people.
Right. Yeah, the writer Cord Jefferson, who's an African-American writer, wrote about just something he calls the Django moment. He has a piece in Gawker where he talks about seeing Django with a mixed-race audience, and what he calls the Django moment is the moment when a black viewer of the film becomes uncomfortable with the laughter of a white viewer next to him, and he describes what his Django moment was in the movie. I mean, I think that idea of, you know, that different audiences, mixed audiences, are going to see the movie completely differently. They'll see the use of the N-word, which is used constantly, constantly by both black and white characters in the movie, very differently, and that's all, you know, disturbing stuff that I don't know exactly what to do with, but that the movie has thrown out there.
Trisha, yeah, what was your reaction to that?
I mean, Dana, I think that's a really good point. I think, but some of that's not just about Django. That's about the question of how black and white people, not only are they not monolithic in their responses, but that they also experience these things differently because their histories are different. And part of it is, well, how can you trust? I mean, I'm speaking here both as a scholar of African American culture and history, but also as an African American. You know, there's a real fear that I can't trust white responses because the illiteracy about race is so extraordinary, and the denial, right, that I can't trust the laughter. And Dave Chappelle was brilliant on this. The question, are you laughing at or laughing with? And he at least argues that that's what largely drove his own discomfort with his own work, was the reception. What were whites laughing at? So this is a big question, and it's really not limited to Django by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think that's something we have to ask ourselves. What do people know? What works? What is funny and what isn't? And we should keep having that conversation as much as possible.
And with respect to the use of the N-word so much throughout the movie, and I'm just, you know, going to be honest, and it felt to me, but I realize my limited standing here as a white guy, but it felt to me that as with most of the violence against slaves in the film, it was disgusting to hear the word, but in a way that almost made a point, that almost always made a point about racism each time, and the word's power in the film was mostly a moral power, not a merely sensational power, and not a racist power. But again, I realize I don't have the experience of that word in my bones. So, Trisha, what was your experience of that aspect of the film?
Well, luckily, I'm happy to say I don't have as much experience as many people, so I'm going to be happy about that. But, you know, I think that, frankly, again, this is the denial. I don't know if it's because it's Hollywood versus music, but most consumers of what I'd call hardcore hip-hop are white males. The vast majority, like 65% to 85% approximately. So they've been listening to the N-word nonstop.
Yeah.
This is not some new activity. So I'm just fascinated by how here we have a context where people are brought much more closely into the history of its use in its brutality and its intention, and I don't see why we should get so uncomfortable all of a sudden. Now, when it was gratuitous in Pulp Fiction and other Quentin Tarantino movies,
mm-hmm.
where it wasn't historically connected, I had a much bigger problem with it. I think there's a compulsion in his work with that word, and I'm not comfortable with that. But when I treat this film individually, I found that it really wasn't as primarily random sounding to me, as it has felt in many of his other works.
Any other thought on that, Dana, before we move on to some calls and bring this is supposed to be about two movies, and we haven't even mentioned Lincoln yet, which shows, I think, the power of the Tarantino film to prompt discussion. But any last thought before we change the script a little bit?
No, let's move on to calls. There's so much to say about this movie that I think we should try to cover it all.
Then let's talk to Roy on Roosevelt Island. Hi, Roy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for letting me speak. I saw both films, and I agree that the Django film is a valuable addition to our American agenda on how we think and how we feel and how we act as a result of our history, and starting to the conversation for a greater understanding of this history. I also like the way that he was very even-handed in showing that we're not talking like the early the W.D. Griffith film of absolute good and absolute bad.
Right.
But we're talking
the
about
the kind of pro-Klan D.W. Griffith Birth of the Nation from over 100
exactly.
years ago.
Yes. What we're talking about here is the humanity that we all share. The brilliant role of the slave who was the house slave and was actually working against black people is an example that is true today. There are many black Americans who are really not working to help their fellow black Americans, but are also poisoned by this American history, where for survival you have to almost deny your humanity. The conversation is the most important contribution that this film is making. There are no absolutes in what he is presented, except the one absolute that I do say he is presenting, and that must be attended to by anyone who sees this film, is the viciousness and the inhumanity that is part of our American history, and how it is unconsciously, even though you might say, oh, some of my best friends are Negroes. How many times have we heard that? I have no guilt. My kids right. play and so on. You still, whether you want to or not, if you're an American by inheritance, you are racist, and you better get to know that before you can change.
Roy, thank you very much for your call. We'll continue in a minute. We have a whole other segment to do on all this context and a movie on Lincoln and Django Unchained with Tricia Rose from Brown University and author of The Hip Hop Wars and Slate's movie critic Dana Stevens, and more of your calls, 212-433-WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And by the way, I want to invite everybody to a free event that I will be hosting later this month. It's our 7th annual Martin Luther King birthday celebration at the Brooklyn Museum, Sunday afternoon, January 20th. Helping to make it special this year is a live reading we will have of excerpts from the play Martin, Malcolm, and Medgar, a reunion which imagines the three slain civil rights leaders meeting in heaven in contemporary times. So I will be co-hosting with Farai Shadea on Sunday, January 20th. Tickets are free, but reservations are required. See the events page at WNYC.org. We continue now with the double feature edition of our series Context and a Movie, where we match a film watcher and an issues watcher to talk about an important current movie, in this case, two. That's why it's a double feature edition, Lincoln and Django Unchained, as we talk with Dana Stevens, Slate's film critic and co-host of Slate's Culture Gabfest, and Trish Rose, professor of Africana Studies at Brown University and author of The Hip Hop Wars. And let's just go right on to another caller and hear Shanti in Jersey City. Shanti, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Brian.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
So what'd you think?
Well, I haven't seen Django Unchained, but about Lincoln, I had sort of two thoughts. And the first one, more of a historical perspective, which your guests can probably speak more to. I just thought that there was a real lack of any black abolitionist figures through their whole movie. And then the second point was just sort of more of a personal reaction that kind of falls into what your guests were talking about earlier in terms of watching the movie, what kind of audience are you watching it with and who responds in what way to certain things. And I was watching it with a predominantly white audience. I'm a woman of color. And the scene at the end where there's sort of this reveal about who Thaddeus Stevens is sleeping with, that he's sleeping with his black housekeeper. Mm-hmm. And it just went over like a huge punchline to a joke. Everybody burst out laughing with this, oh, of course, sort of right. response. And it was sort of like, oh, right, the only reason a white man would care so deeply about banning slavery is because he's sleeping with a black woman. And again, I don't know whether that was just me being overly sensitive, but it just felt really insulting and also very reductionist.
But you think that's what the laughter was about?
Yeah, and again, that could be totally me personally, but the way it was presented, like you sort of see, you know, Esipatha Murkison first, you know, she's opening the door, sort of traditional, you know, like no surprises there. Right. And then the way that that scene is framed of Tommy Lee Jones getting into bed, and it's sort of a close shot on him. And then it pulls back, and she's in bed with him, and oh, my God.
You know? Shanti, thank you very much. Dana, did you react to that way? Or maybe you saw it with an audience of other film critics. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, in a lot of these cases, the same thing with Django. I see things in these sedate press screenings, so I don't get to hear, you know, things like that, these audience reactions. And I think that would have really put me off in that scene, too. It is true that it's filmed as a reveal, sort of a big reveal by Spielberg with the pulling back. But I certainly don't think it's being framed as a punchline. And that would be very discomforting for the audience to take it in that way. And that's a very Django moment right there. I mean, that kind of moment where, you know, the audience takes something to a place that you're not sure the filmmaker intended it to go.
Trisha?
Yeah, no, I found that scene really cheap, and I was really disappointed. And I think it ultimately made it sound like it implied that Stephen's entire motivation was he was sleeping with his mistress, and so therefore he wanted them to be free, black people in general to be free. And,
or maybe, you know, a more charitable reading of that is that, you know, that once there's sort of, you know, when you come to care about individuals, that then it opened your eyes to things.
Yes, but there's no reason to have them in the bed at the end then, right? Which is, of course, reversing the history of extraordinary violence against black women. In fact, the rape of black women slaves was far more significant than almost any other type of ongoing violence that you know, on plantations and elsewhere. So this is a very serious, sensitive issue about which there's no public discussion. So I think if you're going to do that, show them having a relationship, having tea, having coffee, having a conversation, and show it earlier so that you can read his behaviors through a broader humanity and the contradiction of his suffering. I think it played it very cheap. I mean, I like the movie. I'm not making this, you know, the only issue, but the caller, I think, is right on the money.
Yes.
And the fact that people thought it was the surprise reveal, it was played that way, and it was no context given to really give it the richness.
Dana, for me, on Lincoln, the acting was better than the script. Merkson, Daniel Day-Lewis, David Strathairn as Secretary of State Stewart, Sally Field as Mrs. Lincoln, Tommy Lee Jones as the staunch abolitionist Stevens. I thought they were each fabulous, and yet the film was a little much of a hagiography. Not that there is much bad to say about Abraham Lincoln, but he was so saintly. I felt that way, that was a little disconnected. And funny enough, I felt that about the Mandela movie, Invictus, a few years ago, too. But maybe I just have to give these moral giants their unambiguous due, especially in a movie theater. But what do you think?
I mean, I disagree with the Invictus comparison. I completely felt that, you know, the hagiographic force of Invictus and the idea that Mandela wasn't really a character. He really was just sort of a glowing saint on screen. But Lincoln, I give a lot more credit. I actually think that script by Tony Kushner is one of the great scripts of the year, with a couple little lapses into sentimentality here and there. Definitely some directorial lapses in sentimentality on Spielberg's part with the music and the way he frames things. But no, I feel like it was a real portrait. I mean, really, the only bad side you see of Lincoln has nothing to do with his politics. It has to do with his family and, you know, some of his coldness toward his son and his wife. But Daniel Day-Lewis is just so, so sublime in that role that I kind of forgive that movie a lot.
Tricia, in general, Lincoln, did you like it? Did you love it?
Yeah. I liked it. You know, I'm not a big fan of the kind of heroic biopic, sort of historical narrative in that sense. So that's my general, you know, confession. That's not my ideal type of movie. But, you know, I thought it was very well written. I agree with Dana. I actually would like to read the script. There were many moments mm-hmm. that I wished I was at home with my, you know, rewind so that I could hear the line again. I thought some of his contradictions, some of Lincoln's contradictions were left on the table. You know, it wasn't the question of motivation was not around, you know, freeing slaves was not really addressed enough for me. Again, for me, it's the big picture. These movies are in a historical context, so that's how I think about them. What's the big picture? And in that context, we didn't really understand anything about African Americans related to any of these issues in any reasonable way. So it really was almost a sort of a drama about the Constitution, about relationships, and whether or not this kind of change could be negotiated. You know, it was a real insider the last, you know, few weeks type of drama, which, again, you know, it was very well done, definitely. But I didn't come out with a huge level of excitement or insight.
Can I just say something about the very first scene of Lincoln? I rewatched some of it last night, knowing we were going to have this conversation, because it had been a couple months. And the very first scene of Lincoln, the first thing you see is this moment that in a strange way sort of, you know, recalled Django, now that I've seen that, in that it's a scene of black revenge on white Confederate soldiers, right? It's this battle, this very, very brutal Civil War battle, and I'm not enough of a Civil War scholar mm-hmm. to know the name of the battle, but where a black regiment is essentially taking revenge on this Confederate regiment that had, I believe, executed all of the black prisoners. And it's very hard to watch. It's really the opposite of some sort of triumphalism a la Tarantino. It really just feels like this is something that should not have happened in our history.
Mm-hmm. G in Hackensack, you're on WNYC. Hello.
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
I just think as a black person in 2013, it's a travesty because a lot of my white friends, they refuse. They're very uncomfortable about talking about actual things that have happened. And mm-hmm. I even show them books about hangings and slavery. And it just seemed like sometimes I want them to mature and really honestly talk about things. And when you write movies about us, maybe think about, you know, that black folks do know their history accurately and will depict things, because we have to start honestly talking about this without, you know, whites getting defensive and trying to protect what happened, because it happened. It's a part of the history. And I would just appreciate if my white brothers and sisters would mature and honestly talk about this for a change. Thank you so much.
So, G, let me ask. Oh, he's gone. Okay. I was curious to know if he thought that as movies, these films both prompt the kinds of conversations that he think we should be having. Patricia, I want to know what you made of the score of Django Unchained, which comes mostly from spaghetti Western films, but then fading into hip-hop during some of the action scenes. And, of course, you wrote a book about hip-hop. Is Tarantino trying to tell the audience that current African-American experience is the same as during slavery? Or what did you make of the whole mishmash score and the way he used hip-hop in particular?
Well, I mean, I that's a part of the film. I feel like I have to see it again with that, and, you know, not trying to keep up with what's going on visually to really see what he's doing. But my sense was that he was drawing a connection, but I mostly think it was a kind of postmodern mashup where he was connecting a certain kind of history to not so much the exact present, but closer to a kind of blaxploitation. It felt more like the use of blaxploitation soul music, you know, but set in the contemporary period. So I don't think it was a reference to hip-hop. And I don't think that the film in any way really brought us forward to present-day issues by any stretch, and I'm not sure it should have, but mm-hmm. you know, it would have been nice if some connections were made. But there's one other thing I really don't want us to end any of this without getting to, so I'll be very quick. But I think that, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact that this film, I think, would not have been funded at this level or released at this level with a black director, and, you know, either a you know, basically an independent black voice. And this is part of what I think your recent caller was getting at when he said, we know the history, or some of us know the history, and we want everyone to understand it. Black people have been trying to tell these stories for hundreds of years, and the inability and disinterest is rather sustained. And this is part of what I think think Spike Lee's point was about. Not all of it, but part of it. And I think we can't underestimate the fact that there's a kind of racial privilege that goes into both Spielberg and Quentin Tarantino's ability to garner the kind of resources.
Yeah.
I mean, even Reggie Hudlin, who produced it, said he's been trying to make a film on the Middle Passage for 20 years but hasn't quite been able to do it. Oh, well, but why? You know? I mean, it's not that he's incapable of making movies. So this is a really important part of the legacy of slavery, controlling your story, lots of resources and power, the question of what the audience wants to see and from whose perspective. So I think, you know, that's really important and hard to see and when we're looking so closely at an individual film.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really great point. We're almost out of time, but Dana, I was imagining a double feature and which one I would show first. Like, I once saw a double feature of Humphrey Bogart's, what was that movie that was set in the desert? Was it Sahara?
The Treasure of the Sierra Madre?
Yes, followed by African Queen. And it worked to have the harsh desert sands followed by the lush green jungle as a scenic relief. And I think I would put Lincoln first to build up from the more staid to the more action-packed. Do you ever have double feature fantasies?
That is a great question. I have double feature fantasies all the time and love imagining combining programming. Part of me wants to be a cinema programmer. But, yeah, I think Django would have to go second, if only also because Django is a very exhausting, it's an aesthetically exhausting movie to see. And after you see it, you sort of want to go out and have a drink and think about it, not necessarily sit through a three-hour movie about the Civil War.
Though they were both, like two-and-a-half-hour films and both incredibly engaging. And even though, of course, the Lincoln film was at a slower pace, to me, it never really flagged. It was just so engaging. So as a last thought, maybe Tarantino's casual bloodthirstiness forever disqualifies him from Best Picture consideration. But I would almost like to see, in this year that we commemorate the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, see the movies win it together for two great films showing two sides of the coin of the abolitionist imperative, you know, the heady policy side and the gritty personal side. Dana?
To me, that feels a little bit like Tarantino getting a ride on Spielberg's coattails, because I don't think he made as thoughtful a movie. I don't know what Tricia thinks.
Well, you know, I think if they could, well, I mean, you know, ultimately I would like to see some, you know, a collective win for all the African-American filmmakers who've tried to tell these stories under enormous duress. And I think they should both win the awards and then turn them over to the black filmmakers who came before. That would be my fantasy.
Fair enough. And there we leave it with Tricia Rose, author of The Hip Hop Wars and professor of Africana Studies at Brown University, and Dana Stevens, Slate's film critic and co-host of Slate's Culture Gabfest, which you can hear Saturday mornings and Sunday evenings on WNYC. Great conversation. Thanks both of you so much for doing this with us.
That was a pleasure.
Yes, it was. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, psychologist Jeremy Dean, author of Making Habits, Breaking Habits, helps you keep your New Year's resolutions. And I will imagine New Year's resolutions from the past. And based on what actually happened during this week in history, a lot of historical figures apparently spent New Year's deciding to get tough. Stay tuned.